And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We're recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. We've got a great guest today, a Marine who has written his first book, Overwatch. Matthew Bentley, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. I'm happy to be here. Trust me, it's my pleasure to speak to you.
Well, our audience, which is made up of veterans and their friends, is going to love your story. They're going to love Overwatch. But let's start with, tell us a little bit about where you grew up, Matt, and give us that thumbnail sketch.
Sure, and I'll try to do it very briefly. I was born in New Jersey. I lived there until I was 6 and a half, which is why I'm a diehard New York Yankees fan. My family then moved to Cincinnati in 1978, and I lived there for 21 and a half years, which explains my affinity for the Cincinnati Bengals, which has been very painful for several decades, especially after last year's abysmal playoff performance, but that's another story. And then I actually went to Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, where I obtained a degree in psychology as well as two minors, one in political science and one in sociology. And then I worked in Cincinnati, Ohio, upon graduation in 94 in doing a number of odd jobs and then working in corporate America, investigating accidents with injuries and fatalities for Allstate Insurance Company until I went into the Marine Corps in 1999 instead of going to law school. So that is the lowdown in Cliff Notes format.
Well, that's great. I think let's talk about this a little bit. Got out of college, you're working in corporate America, you got that first job. Tell us why you thought, now's the time to go to the Marine Corps.
Well, so I was the co-captain of my mock trial team in college, and we placed 11th in the country. Everything I was doing, even while I was working in corporate America, I was getting ready to take the LSAT, and I was committed to trying to get into a top 10 law school. I actually had one of those life-changing events where I stopped somebody from getting beaten up in a movie theater, and this was in 1998, and I was the only person to stand up and try and defend this guy out of 400 people in a movie theater, and it was literally the next day that I decided I wanted to do something where I would have a more direct impact, and I decided, you know what, law school wasn't the place for me, even though everyone thought that's where I'd end up, and instead I decided I wanted to go into the Marine Corps, and it was really that simple.
So we talk to a lot of people when they make that decision. It's maybe based on a variety of factors. It could be a family history. It could be to be part of something bigger. It could be money for education. Was there something there that just sort of pushed you over the edge and said, I've been thinking about this now that I've had this life-changing experience of being the only guy who's willing to stand up? I've got to take the next step. What was the driver?
It was just, I just realized that I wanted to do more where I would have a direct impact. You know, I used to joke, you can't shoot somebody in law school. And I realized that there were, and this was even pre-9/11, that there were a lot of bad people on the planet. And I figured, where could I go? What military service where I could be the most challenged? And for me, it was, the obvious answer, especially with my personality and my drive, was the Marine Corps.
And it's not unusual when we talk to veterans, once they've made this decision, that others around them are really still pretty uncomfortable with it. Did you find friends or family wondering if you'd lost your mind?
No, in fact, it was quite the opposite. It was like, yep, I can see that, because I was a very driven guy, and I wanted to make an impact, and so... And I built a pull-up bar in my backyard. I started training. I started running seriously for the first time in my life. And after a month, it was like, okay, he's really doing this, and there's no doubt about it. And I did.
Tell us a little bit about your time in the Marines. I think you spent 10 years with the Corps.
I did. I went in the fall of 99, and then I got out in September of 2009. Now, while I was in, I was what was called a Grand Intelligence Officer, where I was privileged enough to go to the Infantry Officer course, do a bunch of additional tactical training. I went to some intelligence courses, and then I also got to attend a shortened version, like an officer version of the Scout Sniper course. And then at one point, I was privileged. And actually, during 9/11, I had command of a scout sniper platoon. In fact, when 9/11 happened, I was pulling targets in what are called the butts, the target area, pulling targets when they announced that the Twin Towers had been attacked and one had been knocked down, which is very surreal.
Tell us a little bit about sort of what was going through your mind at that point where you're going, this is real.
Well, what happened was, I'll never forget it, because there was at the time I was the first lieutenant, and the S2, which was the intel officer for the battalion, he was a captain, and the corporal comes over the loudspeakers and says, I've just been notified that the Twin Towers have been attacked with planes, the Pentagon's been hit, and one of the towers is down. And my corpsman, who later went on to become a Navy SEAL and who ran a 300 PFT, which is a perfect Marine Corps PFT as a Navy corpsman, his father was a Marine colonel and worked in the Pentagon. So he was a bit freaking out until he was able to reach him. But yeah, it was actually really surreal, because we still kept shooting for the rest of the day, because the entire base down at Camp Lejeune was on lockdown. No one could move around. No one knew if other bases were going to get hit. No one knew what was going on. So we just actually kept shooting for the rest of the day, and I didn't see coverage until about 1900 that night when I got back to the battalion CP.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's a lot of the world changed in those hours.
It did. In fact, my battalion was one of the first battalions that was put on strip alert, where we thought we would be heading to Afghanistan. And we were on like a 5-hour strip alert for the entire month of October, I believe.
And we're talking to Matt Bentley, who is the author of Overwatch, who spent 10 years in the Marine Corps, and it's really sort of the fertile ground on which he's written his first novel, which we're going to talk about. But I'm curious, Matt, you know, 10 years is a long time to stay in service. What'd you learn? What did you find out about yourself, and what sort of core things did you learn or absorb being in the Marine Corps that long?
So it's actually kind of a complicated question for me, and the reason is that I'm now a recovering alcoholic who's 7 years sober, who was heavily drinking probably every weekend while I was in the Marine Corps. Most people didn't know it, but every bad thing that's ever happened to me because of my personality happened when I was drinking. While I was a good officer, I still would battle my alcoholism on the weekends. And, you know, by the time I was getting ready to get promoted to my, and during that 10 years, I went to Africa after 9/11 happened, and then I went to Fallujah before the surge, from 06 to 07, and I got out of Fallujah a week before the surge started. Now, what I'll say is that it wasn't until 2008 that I realized that if I wanted to move forward in my life, and I was getting ready to go to my next career level school, I was likely going to be promoted to major, that I was miserable, especially after getting back from Iraq. Iraq didn't make my drinking worse. I was already well into the point of being a functioning alcoholic. But I finally had a realization that I had to get my head on straight. And what I'll say, and this is the whole point, is that the Marine Corps gave me the discipline and the self-awareness to finally deal with it head on, because I never thought, I can remember thinking I was never going to get out of the cycle, that I just couldn't, I didn't have the willpower to do it. And finally, I hit my rock bottom, which for me was fortunate. I didn't get a DUI. I didn't get arrested. I didn't get into a fight or get arrested for a fight or anything like that. I just had a realization that if I wanted to move forward my life, I was going to have to do something about it. And this was in 2000 and actually early 2009. And so I referred myself to the Marine Corps' Substance Abuse Counseling Office. and then was fortunate enough to be placed in an intensive outpatient program at Andrews Air Force Base, where I drove down there every day for 5.5 weeks, and I've been sober ever since. So what I would say is, for me, the Marine Corps gave me the discipline to get my life on track. You know, I've been out of the Marine Corps now since, it'll be 7 years in September, and I'm probably more fit now than I am when I was in the Marine Corps. I joke that I'm probably a better officer now than I was in the Marine Corps, and I try to live my life today as more of a testament to what the Marine Corps gave me than anything else, because at the end of the day, that's what's really important.
Well, I think it's an interesting situation where you were able to realize it yourself without maybe running afoul of the legal system.
Or,
yeah. Dancing around where you might have ended up. But
yeah, absolutely. You know, and the thing is I couldn't see it while I was in it. I mean, and now I look back and go, God, it was so evident, but. You know, when you're living in it, it's hard to pull yourself out of it sometimes.
Going again to sort of the support structure that you had, obviously the Marine Corps gave you some support structure to work your way out of it. Were there family and friends that likewise sort of helped you stay on the path that you chose?
Well, so for me, each person's story is different. With me, once, you know, I had tried to quit drinking before, but once sobriety kicked in this time, it's stuck and I've never looked back. You know, I still go to AA meetings. I talk about it in front of very large groups of people. I'll lead meetings. I'm quite open about it. But of course, everyone who knows me was completely supportive because trust me, I'm the type of person that definitely wants to stay sober just because of my personality.
So you get yourself into the program and work your way through that program in 2009, and getting out then in September of 2009, was that just the next logical step in this path?
It was. In fact, I then transitioned into a civilian job with the government, and then it was also during that time when I had been about 6 months sober, and this segues into the book, where I was on vacation soon after getting out of the Marine Corps, like a month after getting out of the Marine Corps, I was on vacation with my wife, and I was reading a boring bestseller that just had me bored to tears and to sleep, and I turned to her because I have tough guy dialogue in my head all day long, and I just said, you know, I can write a better book than this. And she looked at me and said, okay. And I obsessed about it for an entire year before I finally couldn't stop the physical compulsion I had to start writing. And that's how Overwatch was born. You know, I started it about a year later. And I wrote a 5-year plan down on a whiteboard and said, this is what I'm going to do. And my wife said, I'll support you all the way. But you're not quitting your day job. So
is there any eye rolling in this thing? I mean, the wife's got to look over to you and go, oh, God, here we go again.
So she knows me well enough to know that when I say I'm going to do something, I'm either going to do it until I either succeed or fail miserably in, like, glorious fashion. It's either going to be one or the other. It's not just going to be like, maybe I'll stop writing. Or it's either I'm an all or nothing guy. That's just the way that I'm wired. And the Marine Corps brought that out of me even more so and focused it. And so it was either I'm all in and this is what I want to do. So I wrote the book. And of course, I gave my protagonist, Logan West, a more extreme version of my own background. I made him a former force recon commander who was in serious combat in Iraq, who also was, at the beginning of the book, is actually a relapsing alcoholic who emerges from a blackout. So the book itself took 18 months, 8 days to write. Then it was another 6 months to edit. Then it was another year to find an agent. And then it was another 14 months before we had a book deal.
Stop there because I want you to explain to folks how many times it was rejected.
Oh, so it's a fantastic process because you have to, first off, not only do you have to think about it, at least my mentality was, okay, I love the writing part, but I also have to think about it from a business perspective because I want to break into a commercial mainstream market. So I developed a business plan. I had all this put together. But at the time, there were 92 commercial fiction agencies. And you can't get a book deal with a Simon & Schuster or a Random House or one of the other big five without an agent. And each one of those agencies that handled my kind of fiction gets about 1,000 submissions a month. So it was rejection after rejection after rejection, which was really – and I just said, kept plugging away. And it was finally number 83 that said, we absolutely want this. I can't believe you haven't been picked up already. And then, you know, so that felt like I had won the lottery. But that was just getting an agent. And then it was more rejections from publishers until Simon & Schuster gave us a two-book deal. So
I think it's important for veterans in this transition after they get out of the military where things are so structured to realize you may have passion on something and you really know this is what you want and can do, but there may be 82 rejections before you break through, and not giving up was probably your core attribute at that point.
Oh, absolutely. It was, you know, I was fully prepared to execute my own business plan and fund it with $20,000 of my own money. That's how all in I actually was. And, you know, fortunately I didn't have to do that, but it was, Simon & Schuster actually used some of my own business plan in the advertising over the last month. But it was, I was either going to go down in flames or succeed, and that was it.
So Overwatch was envisioned by you as having a protagonist, Logan West, who would be the hero in a multiple series of books of sort of military action adventures, I think, right?
Well, so the first one has a more military feel to it, and just to summarize what the story's about, like I said, Logan West emerges from a relapsing blackout to have to actually kill a mercenary sent to capture him looking for an artifact that Logan's Force Recon platoon acquired in Fallujah in 2004. And it triggers a global race across North America, Mexico, and Iraq. And at the same time, I actually tell an ambush at an insurgent compound from 2004 that happened to Logan's platoon in three parts throughout the book. And that flashback sequence is kind of the origin as to why Logan, well, it is the origin as to why Logan is the way he is when we find him in the opening pages of the book. What I'll say is that book two, tentatively titled First Shot, which has been done for over a year. In fact, I will be done with the copy editing either today or tomorrow. And that's slated for March of 2017. That's a little bit more geopolitical in nature. It's actually, in my opinion, more intense, more action-packed, more emotional, and just maybe like 60 pages longer. And that's based on feedback I've received from beta readers. But there's not it's more geopolitical and an action thriller. It doesn't have like the Fallujah sequence that Overwatch does, because that really is the origin story.
Yeah, I've got to tell our listeners, and we're talking to Matt Bentley, who wrote Overwatch, a Marine for 10 years, and one day told his wife, I can write better fiction than I'm reading, and it went out and did it. This thing is packed with action. You will not be bored when you read this. This thing's got more twists and turns, and as Matt just said, you race all around the world. You're in the United States, you're in Mexico, you're overseas. It's got a lot of action on it, and I think everybody who does read it, Matt, is really going to be looking forward to your next book as well. But what has surprised you about the reaction to this book?
So regarding the book, one thing I'd like to add is that when I sat down to write, I decided that first off I was going to write what I know, which is why I wanted to make my character have an origin in the background. And, of course, I made him a much badder-ass guy than I am.
He's also better-looking,
yeah,
right?
Of course he is. With model good looks and sparkling green eyes, he is. And however, I wanted to write what I like to read, which is I wanted to write an action-packed story that would grip you from the first page and shake you violently and not let go until the ride was over. And that's it. It was really that simple, and that's why the book reads so fast. As to what surprised me, the first thing that surprised me was when we were sending the book out to other authors for blurbs, and Clive Cussler loved it so much that he personally called my publisher at Simon & Schuster. He called my editor and left her a voicemail, and she had to play it multiple times to make sure it wasn't a prank, because it's Clive Cussler.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty high praise.
It was unreal. And then, you know, just the amount of praise and the positive reviews, it's actually rather humbling, because at the end of the day, this whole thing isn't about me. It's actually about the readers and about the experience that they have with the book. And that is what matters most to me, is that reaction. I'm sure there will be people out there who won't like it. You know, and I'm okay with that, because everybody, and that's the great thing about this country, is everybody's entitled to his or her opinion. But a lot of people seem to really appreciate it, especially if they read the genre.
Well, I think you're going to find that not only veterans are interested in this because they enjoy that genre, but I think you've probably experienced out on the book trail non-veterans, women, others who just like fast action-paced thrillers to have really gotten into Overwatch as well.
Yeah, in fact, that's absolutely the case. Most of the people I've met, and I had an event in Rhode Island last week where 85 people showed up, most of them were not veterans. It's actually really interesting to meet the people who are huge fans of this genre, and every one of them has been great. I mean, it's so much fun to interact with the readers.
Now, there's two little features here. I got to find out how close to home it is. Logan West has a badass ex-wife who I'll let you expound on, and there's a really good dog story here too. So where do these two stories, two plot lines, come from?
Well, I'm a dog owner, so that scene was very hard to write. I'll just be up front, and I've had some people like scream at me about that, including a radio host in Detroit. And that's how we started that interview. I was like, great, this is fun. And, but it was, and I've always told my wife, this is what you would do if somebody broke into our house. Like, this is, so I decided to write that kind of sequence into the book. And I also thought it was very good to actually have, Logan's wife be really the main focus of the first real action scene of the book, other than the opening scene with Logan waking up with a mercenary in his house.
No, it's really well done. We're talking to Matthew Bentley, who wrote Overwatch after spending 10 years in the Marine Corps. He currently works for the federal government. Matt, how do people follow what you're doing and kind of stay in touch with your ongoing literary efforts?
Well, first they can go to MatthewBentley.com, but then for day-to-day, everybody's on Twitter. So now I am on Twitter as well, and it's just at Matthew Bentley. And then I'm also on Facebook with a Facebook fan page, which I believe is Matthew Bentley as well. And then they can also just Google me and see all the stuff that's going on. The book's available everywhere. There's also an audiobook, which is narrated by one of the actors on ABC's Scandal, George Newbern, and he does such a fantastic job that I listened to the book while driving across country. And there are times where it's so good that I forgot that I wrote it. I mean, it's just, he's really that good of a narrator with accents and everything. So it's available in all formats.
It's not only a good audiobook, listeners, it's a great read. Pick it up either in ebook or hard copy. You won't be disappointed. I want to thank you for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. We're on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows at veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.